Our next talk is mineralization of carbon stored in the soil of forests after exposure to elevated concentrations of atmospheric carbon dioxide and ozone by Robert Qualls.
Thanks. Now, I think that most of us are aware that forests, by and large, grow faster when they're exposed to heightened concentrations of atmospheric carbon dioxide. Been quite a few experiments by this time. Now, basically what I want to talk about today is that additional amount of productivity, is that going to be stored in the soil, or is it just going to be whisked away within a few years by microbial respiration? So I'd like to first point out my co-authors here and thank them. That's Kurt Fregitzer and Court Campany. They used to be at University of Nevada, Reno. Now they're at Moscow. And this is the one that's in the United States, by the way. And I'd like to thank a lot of people. There are many people who have been in on growing the trees and planning the face site and constructing it, none of which I was in on. I didn't help with that. I'd also like to thank a few graduate students and a great many students who, if you want a great job as an undergraduate, then you can pick out roots from dirt for hours and hours and hours. The money's nice. That's Department of Energy and the U.S. Forest Service and National Science Foundation. So I'm just going to give you an outline of what we're going to be talking about. First, I'm going to go out a little bit of background about elevated CO2 effects in general, and then we're going to look at the Aspen face site itself. We're going to talk about how CO2 and ozone fumigation have changed productivity at this face site. And we're going to look at some methods, the final harvest, the soil sampling, the incubation for a year, and then we're going to see some results of soil respiration. Now, we do have an isotopic labeling going on here because of the depletion in the additional carbon dioxide from the fossil fuel source. Haven't got those results back yet, but that's in progress. So, what do we want to basically, what's the reason for our study? Well, we've seen significantly greater productivity at this site with elevated carbon dioxide. And in fact, during the most recent years of measurement of root productivity, there's about a 30% increase in fine root productivity. Wow. The bowls are bigger. There's more litter fall under CO2. Now, we've also got ozone there. What happens with ozone? Well, ozone's bad for trees, at least during their first few years, but then the ozone-resistant trees seem to kind of take over and fill in the gaps. But we do still see increased root turnover with ozone. So our basic objectives are to ask, is the carbon being sequestered for a long period of time in these forests when we have more carbon dioxide or ozone? Or both in combination? And are those carbon inputs, when you have elevated carbon dioxide, are they going to be more labile or more refractory? And finally, we want to determine the kinetics of soil respiration so that we can extrapolate to longer periods of time. I'm sorry, I'm impatient. I want to know what's going to go on with this carbon, 5 years. 10 years down the road, 20 years. So, here's a picture of the site right here, and I think that you can see, here's an example of one ring right here, and this is when the trees were fairly small. They got much, much bigger, and overall you can see 12 rings spread out here, and there are blocks here, and that corresponds to a soil gradient that goes in general in from the bottom of the slide to the top of the slide. So let's look back at the treatments. We have ambient. We're just blowing air through tubes. We have elevated carbon dioxide. We have elevated ozone. But then you may live in a part of the world where you have both elevated carbon dioxide and ozone. So here's an interaction right here. Now, if we look inside one of those rings, now it turns out that we have actually three species of trees planted there. Unlike a lot of other studies, not just one species of trees, we got three in here. We have on the right side, it's half aspen. On the left side, one quadrant is aspen mixed with maple and another aspen mixed with birch. So there's three species there. Now, one of the advantages that we have in this study is that we're looking at a just short of 12 years of growth. So this is one of the longest periods of exposure of any of the FACE experiments. Furthermore, we're looking at a complete harvest in 2009, not just some little cores that were taken, because everybody has to be very careful because of limited sampling during the period of time of this experiment. No, we're sampling the whole thing. So we can dig big soil pits and everything. And also, it's the interaction of two pollutants, both carbon dioxide and ozone. And it's not just one species, it's three. So here is the final sampling of the soil pit. And you can see the trees up here in the background. And they've gotten pretty big. They grow fast. They're aspens and some maples and birch in there. Also, this goes all the way down to 1 meter. And it's being sampled, as you can see, in 10-centimeter increments. So we can see where the carbon is being stored, just on the surface, or is there enhanced storage even down in the soil? Okay, then we pick the roots out, and boy, is that a miserable procedure. And then we have to measure water holding capacity by the most widely used method, at least in soil respiration studies. And then we adjust all samples to 60% of the water holding capacity, because that's where just about the optimum of carbon mineralization rate has been found to occur. And then we stick some sodium hydroxide in that jar and we incubate it for a year. And of course we do a control. And then we take these out periodically and we can measure 8 times a year, measure the conductivity, because as you can see down in the sample right here, now we have a combination of sodium hydroxide and sodium carbonate. And because carbonate has only 1/3 the conductivity of the hydroxide ion, then this is a very accurate and precise way to measure respiration, much better than titration, I can tell you that, much better than GC. And it's easy. And also, then we have the sample left over, and so we can do the following. We can take phosphoric acid and stick it in that vial and neutralize all the sodium hydroxide. The carbon dioxide comes up in the headspace. Then we stick a needle down in it, and we can stick it into an excitator, and we can send it to UC Davis and find out how much carbon-13 is in it. They haven't sent us the results back, though. So now, so much for the fun pictures. Now we have to look at a graph. We always have to look at data. Oh. So what I'm going to show you in the next two graphs is the percentage of the initial carbon that was respired over the period of a year. This is the cumulative respiration over the entire year first. And we have two depths. We have depth 0 to 10 first. So the first thing I'm going to show you is that there is a significant effect of carbon dioxide over all three communities, and that's an average of a 13% increase. So if we compare these bars, bar by bar, the purple bar here with the ambient purple bar, and the red bar with that bar, and that bar with that bar, then those all turn out to be statistically significant, and they're bigger. And now, how about ozone? Well, ozone also has a significant effect, and if we take those bars and compare them with those bars, we see that there is a significant ozone effect, which might be surprising. I sure was. And then we find out that CO2 and ozone is actually not significant. That's just because we have a little bit too much variability up here. But we'll see at the lower depth, it is significant. So we just look at another depth in the soil, the 10 to 20, and we see this is all pretty much the same thing, except this time we have a 27% increase in response to carbon dioxide treatment. With ozone, we have a 32% more carbon dioxide was respired in a year. Wow, what's that mean? So we'll try to explain it in a minute. And we have also a significant interaction here. So that's just cumulative data. Now, I said we wanted to extrapolate because I'm impatient. And so since we are only incubating it for a year, what's 1 year's incubation? That is worth at least 3 years in the field, you know, because it's in a nice incubator and it's really cold in Wisconsin, which is near the Upper Peninsula. I think the Upper Peninsula is called Eastconsin. Is that right, Andrew? But anyway, we're trying to peel this into a three-component curve, which is a very common way of presenting data in trying to extrapolate. So we have what we had referred to as a fast pull, a slow pull, and a resistant pull. Now that resistant pull, I should mention, is defined by boiling it for 16 hours in 6 normal hydrochloric acid. And Dale, that is what I've been using your heater for, by the way. Thank you for loaning it to me. I didn't want to tell him about the acid boiling over. So anyway, when we actually do this on just the ambient and CO2 treatments, we find that we have a line. This, by the way, is supposed to be 0.95, but the program rounded it off for me to 1. So that's supposed to be 0.95 right there. But here's the line for the ambient, and here's the line for the CO2 treatment. We see them steadily diverging. And we hope to extrapolate that on out and be able to say, well, it's in 1 year, it was a 12% increase. But what would it be if that went on out for a few years, or 10 years, or 20 years? We can see a lot of carbon sequestration. So finally, our conclusions are that the percentage of carbon that was mineralized during the incubation was significantly greater in plots when we had CO2 compared with ambient. How about ozone? Well, there was significantly greater concentrations of carbon dioxide in plots treated with ozone. And in fact, at least in the 10 to 20 depth, in the combination of ozone plus CO2. And the difference was about 13% and 25% at the 10 to 20 centimeter depth when we look at CO2. So how does that compare with the productivity? Well, we saw increases of 30% in root productivity, so it does not really account for the full increases in root productivity alone. There are some increases in litter input also. We're assuming a lot of the soil organic matter originated from root input. Well, it was not quite enough to account for the fate of the increase in primary production in the carbon dioxide enriched plots, but it was a good percentage of it. However, in the very end, a substantial amount of carbon from the CO2 enrichment still remained in the slow and resistant fractions, even after 1 year. So some portion of this increased productivity is actually being packed away. So thanks. Any questions? We have time.